Freedom Party believes that the purpose of government is to protect our freedom of choice, not to restrict it. Hello, I'm Murray Hopper, your Voice of Freedom host. The following debate on feminism took place on May 3, 85, just one day after the provincial election. It was broadcast live on Radio 98's Wayne McLean Hotline program, the highest rated talk show for its time period in southwestern Ontario. As you will see, the Freedom Party spokesman and the feminist spokeswoman, or perhaps I should have said spokesperson, disagree on most points. Here's how it went.
Good morning. Please hold for the Wayne McLean Hotline.
Welcome to the Hotline. This is your direct access to London opinion. What an election last night. Maybe we'll get a chance to talk about that next week in one of our shows. And what a great morning today. Couldn't ask for anything more beautiful. This morning, we're going to talk about the feminist movement, including the philosophy and the issues that go along with it. And I'll be asking you if you feel the feminist movement speaks for you or not. My guests this morning, first of all, Heidi Strasser. She's a member of the London Status of Women Action Group. She also belongs to Western's Women's Issues Commission. And on the other side of the fence is London businessman, political activist Mark Emery, probably one of the more colorful characters in our city. Mark is the campaign director for the fledgling Freedom Party. And he characterizes the women's movement as a war between feminism and freedom. We're going to find out why in just a moment. But first, we want to hear from you as well. We'd like to ask you, does the feminist movement speak for you? To reach us with your opinions, call 433-3121. The hotline phones are ready now to take your call. 433-3121. Now, if you feel the feminist movement doesn't speak for you, does it speak for the majority of Canadian women? Two guests this morning. Heidi Strasser is with me. Is it okay to call you a feminist? Is that all right?
Yeah, I call myself other things as well. I'd call myself a humanist in general, a feminist, among other things, certainly.
Okay. We're going to have a very interesting discussion this morning, and of course we want you to take part. Mark Emery, nice to see you back again.
Hello, Wayne.
What I'm going to do now, as I mentioned, is go through a number of issues, and I'd like a brief response on each one, okay? Yes or no, depending on how you feel about it. Heidi Strasser first. Should pornography be regulated by the government?
Briefly, yes.
Okay, Mark, what do you say to that?
Oh, without question, no.
Is pornography sex discrimination?
Most definitely.
Quite possibly.
Okay. Let's talk for just a second about the difference between obscenity, pornography, and erotica. Heidi, is there a difference between those three things?
As the obscenity code stands now, yes. Things like showing intercourse on the screen is presently illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily feel that that's obscene. Things like, a rape scene, for example, I would consider to be obscene.
How would you feel, though, about a Charles Bronson movie where there was a simulation?
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty fine line to draw. I don't personally watch these movies, so I haven't had much experience.
Okay. Mark, the difference between obscenity, pornography, and erotica. Is there one?
Oh, yes. Erotica is always what you like, and pornography is always what the person other than you likes that you want to try and prohibit. It's everything that you find acceptable about sexuality is erotica, and everything you find repugnant is called pornography, and of course it changes from every single person in the universe.
Okay, let me get on to another issue now, abortion. What do you say about abortion?
I think it's a woman's choice as to what she wants to do.
Okay, Mark, how
I'm
about you?
Sure it's a fluke, but we agree on this, but for entirely different reasons. I also don't believe people who are opposed to abortion should be paying for and subsidizing the abortions of others. But that comes into the discussion of responsibility, which I think is the key to this whole discussion.
Equal pay for work of equal value.
If we don't have it instated, I think it's going to take something like 1,877 years for women to be economically equal to men.
But how would you regulate such a thing? Wouldn't you have a lot more bureaucrats and government officials, and wouldn't the cost be...
Yes, the cost would be considerable, but on the other hand, you have to take into account what is the cost to women going to be in the future if it isn't instated.
Okay, equal pay, Mark.
Oh, it's an absolutely Marxist concept. There's no doubt about it. The equal pay for work of equal value clearly and explicitly implies that government is going to have to determine these values, taking those rights away from both the employees to negotiate and the employer to pay what he can afford and what he feels is right.
Marxist?
Absolutely.
You don't think you're going a little too far?
Oh, no. The equal pay for work of equal value is a completely Marxist philosophy. It just shows you how far our society has evolved with socialism because we don't recognize it anymore as that.
Pensions for housewives.
I don't believe in pensions per se, but I do believe in guaranteed
annual
income.
Annual income.
Mm-hmm.
Who pays for that? Does that come off the does the tax go up for the spouse, the man in that case? Does it come out of general revenues and taxes?
I think we're going to go into this in a little bit of detail later on, I hope. But we need survivor benefits, definitely, right now.
Okay.
They have to be instated immediately.
All right, how about you, Mark, on pensions for housewives?
No, I don't believe in that at all. For one thing, on the pragmatic level, it would be impossible to pay for, and we'd only be taxing other women to pay for them later on down the line. Our whole pension system is completely overdrawn. It's going to be bankrupt soon. I think pensions for men, if they're not earned through their employment situations, are also wrong. The children of tomorrow simply aren't going to be able to afford to pay for the many millions of Canadians that will be drawing very excessive pensions in the 10, 20 years future.
Heidi, back to you. Are all women vulnerable, do you think, to sexual violence and or spousal abuse?
Absolutely. I don't think that there's any woman, regardless of her status or her income, who is not vulnerable to it in one way or another.
Okay, how about that, Mark?
Well,
vulnerability of all women.
Well, that's a stereotype that's being reinforced by the feminists for their own ends. That's a complete falsehood. I'm a believer that you always get what you deserve in life, and sure, there are extraordinary events that happen to us that are unfortunate, but generally, if we permit a relationship to deteriorate and we consent to be there even though we recognize there's violence going on, we are the architects of our own fate. We know we should get out. If we don't get out of a relationship that's destructive, mutually destructive, then we have only ourselves to blame and not others. And that's very important because I think the feminist movement's looking for scapegoats when they find that there's battering going on in a family.
Okay, one more and then we want to open our phone lines. And this, of course, is very, very topical, what with Crosby's announcement yesterday and the Fraser Commission report back a week and a half ago. The legalization of prostitution. How does the feminist movement feel about that, Heidi Strasser?
Well, I personally don't feel differently, I would say, than the majority of other feminists, because I don't agree with prostitution on a moral level. But I think most feminists would agree that it should be legalized.
Why?
Because women are being exploited by people like pimps, for example. And they have to be able to have control over their own bodies and their own destiny if they choose to prostitute their bodies. They have to have control over themselves.
Okay, Mark Emery, legalization of prostitution.
Oh, without fail. In fact, it would solve many of our problems. The biggest complaint is that prostitutes are on the street. And if we allowed them to operate out of their homes or a business, they'd be off the street. And no one should be on the street promoting their business. Streets are for walking and traveling and moving from place to place. But that's not what the feminists said at the Fraser Committee. I was there in the feminist community, can you believe this, from Western, University of Western, said that they recommended the government should get prostitutes to act as informers on the client so that they could report these to government. Another of many examples where the feminists are advocating a much greater police state, much more controls, much less freedom.
Police state, did that happen? Is he right on that point that they were talking about the idea of informers?
Five law students from Weston made that
a
very key point.
Yeah, that's the Women in Law Caucus, yeah.
What do you think about that?
Well, it has it's valid, I suppose, to an extent, because prostitutes are always the ones who are prosecuted, and the Johns, or whatever you want to call them,
mm-hmm.
are never taken in. You know, they're not held responsible for their actions.
But once again, Wayne, we see that the feminists really want to expand the number of victims. They don't want to address why they're victims, which they shouldn't be, of course. They just want to make more victims. And, of course, they want to pick on someone they feel hasn't been prosecuted so far, and that's generally the male clients. And so all we're seeing is their anger being directed to getting more and more victims and not addressing a problem.
What do you say?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I would agree with Mark on that point.
Okay, 433-3121 is the number. We're talking about the feminist movement today, and I've raised a number of issues, and if you'd like to talk about some of these issues and some of the comments of either of my guests, our phone lines are open. 433-3121 is the number. Does the feminist movement speak for you? And based on what you've heard already from Heidi Strasser, I think this will give you an idea of some of the things that she and the groups to which she belongs are talking about. And of course, Mark Emery has said some very poignant things, some very pointed comments, and you may agree with him or you may disagree, whatever your pleasure. 433-3121. Is our caller there?
Sam, Wayne.
And you're on the air with Mark Emery and Heidi Strasser. How do you feel about the feminist movement?
Well, I'm not with it or against it, but they can do whatever they want. My problem is with three subjects here that you've brought up.
Okay.
Really, it's really getting ridiculous. I find that, you know, this government doing something about the porn that's going on. I believe people should be allowed to read and watch what they want. My main concern is children in those, like, the prostitution. I mean, down in Toronto.
Now, do you mean kiddie porn?
No, people go with kiddie porn, which is disgusting. I mean, all pornography, to me, is disgusting. But if we have people that get their kicks out of this, good enough. Let them do what they want. But I'm afraid for the children. This is what bothers me so much when I listen to programs like this.
And let me get my guests in on this very, very quickly here. I think the issue our caller is raising is this question of child prostitution.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe indirectly some kiddie porn. Now, when you talk about pornography, Mark Emery, and the legalization of prostitution, do you see in your own mind legislation and laws to really punish the people who get kids involved with this, from the standpoint of appearing in a pornographic magazine or from prostitution?
That's the big mistake. People who, like myself, support the right to read whatever material does not include the right of people to exploit minors in whatever fashion, whether it's prostitution or pornography.
Okay.
And we just don't believe that, or I don't believe that censorship is the law to use. You can use forcible confinement, kidnapping, procuring for immoral use of a minor, many, many laws, but not censorship, not ones that have a blanket effect over many other kinds of publication.
Oh.
This woman's concerns are very reasonable. She seems to have what I consider a very mature and proper attitude. She believes adults should do what they want and take the responsibility for it. She's very concerned with children.
Heidi, what do you say to her problem? I don't think there'd be too much disagreement here.
No, I agree with Mark, excuse me, on that people should be prosecuted for exploiting minors. There's no question about that. And in terms of child pornography, it should not be simply the exploiter who should be prosecuted, but the reader of the material or the possessor of material, child pornography.
How about that? What about the possessor, Mark?
Well, the sale should be illegal too, but for the same reasons.
Okay.
Accessory to kidnapping,
right.
Accessory to...
928-433-3121 is the number. Radio 98. Jill, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Hi, Jill.
Hi. First of all, women's movement, feminist
mm-hmm.
movement.
Does it speak for you is our question today?
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
I'm a domestic engineer.
Don't you even agree with pensions for housewives, though?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I certainly do, but I think that there are more immediate things that the feminist group could do to ensure that.
Give us an example.
Pensions, kind of pension.
Mm-hmm.
If a woman's husband dies, she gets half his pension. Why should she get half his pension? She's not getting a pension of her own until much later. Why should she only get half a pension?
Well, I believe the assumption for that is, Wayne, is that because the man receiving the pension is providing for two people, and with his death, the proviso, the necessary amount of income is halved.
It's halved, but she still has the full weight of the mortgage payments, if there are any.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And she still pays the same rent.
Well, to look at it this way, though...
She still has the same living expenses.
You know, I can't defend Canada pension system, and I'm going to take this on a reverse tack. There isn't enough money to cover that pension system in the future. So when you ask for greater income or anybody asks for larger pensions, it's coming at the expense of the young people between 20 and 40 years old who are working and are going to be paying for your pension. And I may add, they'll be paying a great deal more for a pension they're not likely to collect than anybody collecting a pension today ever did pay into it. So when you ask for more money, it's not like it's a gift from heaven. This money is going to be taken out of someone's pockets, and I think we have to consider that carefully before we ask for more money.
Okay, let me throw this over to Heidi for a second here. You called for a guaranteed annual income mm-hmm. for housewives.
Yes.
And I asked you who's going to pay for it. And I don't know whether I got a direct answer on that. Now, Mark's talking about increases in taxes and that sort mm-hmm. of thing. And there is no free lunch, is there?
No, of course not, no. However, I think that the problem is going to be alleviated within the long-term future because there are more women in the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the problem isn't going to be so great in the next, 10 to 20 years, I don't think. But I want to ask this woman, Anne, is it?
This is Jill.
Jill, sorry. Why are you under the impression the feminist movement is not doing anything for you? Why do you think that the feminist movement is not working toward this goal which you're concerned about?
Well, that's not the only reason. That was just the first one where there could be some immediate action. Personally, I don't think that violence in the home and pornography are simply feminist issues.
No, not at all. I don't agree with that either.
Bad social issues that should be tackled by everyone in society.
Absolutely. And women's issues are everyone's issues.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I go to a cocktail party. First thing people ask me, where do you work? Every piece of paper that comes home from school, they want a business address
mm-hmm.
for mom.
Yeah.
Mothers, people who do not go out into the workforce, who stay at home to raise not only their children, but the little kid down the block who has a cold and his mom is working. We are the people who are providing the healthy little minds and bodies that are going to be paying the income tax to support the feminist movement and any other movement and pension in the future. What do we get? Well, I'm a housewife.
Well, I hope that's not true.
You are looked down on. You are treated as though you are a complete illiterate. And yet, these are the women who, when their children are in school full time, are the ones that are out doing all the volunteer work in the hospitals, in the schools.
Yes,
support all these programs.
Was there a point, Heidi, back in the beginning, in the 60s,
mm-hmm.
that people had the impression that the feminist movement was saying, if you're not out in the workplace and you stay at home, you're looked down upon. If you stay home to raise children, did the feminist movement give that kind of impression at the beginning?
I wasn't around then, so I can't say for sure.
It was, and yes, it did.
Yeah, okay.
I was in the workforce at the time.
I think you'll find now, though, that feminists are learning from their mistakes, as all groups, any civil rights group will. And I don't know of anyone personally, at least, who looks down on housewives at all. I admire them very much.
Well, let me make another little point here. With all of these moms out in the workforce, who is raising the children? Why does Fanshawe College have courses in how to enjoy your two-year-old, what to do with your infant? We have become a society where the child is a responsibility that is foisted off on someone else because you can afford it.
And do you think the feminist movement is promoting that kind
yes,
of thing
very,
still?
Very much so.
Okay.
Very much so.
Oh, I'd like to absolutely concur, Wayne. The feminist movement is encouraging a complete breakdown in responsibility in our society by constantly advocating subsidized daycare, which is only going to encourage people to, like when people have a child, Wayne, that's a responsibility they've taken on. They made a commitment to themselves and to the child they're bringing into this world. That's not our commitment. And nowadays, many, many women and many men together and the feminist lobby groups are advocating that we accept their responsibility. We pay for their children to go to daycare. They want us to take the responsibilities that they now want to deny. And that's the big problem with not just the generation of young people. Our entire society is too willing to give away the responsibility that is theirs, that they took on, but then when they find they don't like it, they want somebody else to cover for them.
What do you think, Heidi?
I have to disagree on that, absolutely. The feminist movement, I think, is if anything, it's putting more onus on the fathers to take care of the children as well. The woman has as much responsibility in the household, whether she's working or not, as the man does. But she does all the child care, all the housework, everything. And if she's working, she does those things on top of working.
Jill, thank you
Wait a minute.
Very quickly, please.
Wayne, wait a minute. If you take a look at violence in the home, child pornography, child prostitution, child pornography. I have a question to ask you. Where the heck is that kid's mother? Where is she?
How about where's his father?
He's probably out working. Where's mom?
The mother's probably working, too, for economic reasons.
Why, for a new car? For a bigger house?
No, probably not.
Come on now.
Probably out of necessity.
You take a look at the number of women that are taking jobs from young people coming out of universities, from the male who is supposed to be and generally can be the breadwinner. And what happens? If these women stayed home and looked after their kids, I think we would have a much stronger society. And on abortion, women do have the rights over their own bodies, but they should damn well exercise them before they become pregnant.
So no abortion, you're saying?
I'm saying women should educate themselves. Come on. If you're going to hop into the sack with someone, you know the consequences.
Jill, let me thank you for your contribution today. Marjorie, you're on the air.
Yes?
Go right ahead, please. Does the feminist movement speak for you?
On most of the issues.
Okay. Which ones don't they speak for you on?
Well, I'm really opposed to abortion, except in cases of incest or rape.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, I am opposed, and I think a woman should control her body before pregnancy and not after.
Okay.
And I do sometimes think the feminist movement has a confrontational approach against men. I think men and women need to work together, and I think wise men stand for most of the issues that the feminists stand for.
Okay.
I am definitely in favor of this stand against violent pornography.
How about hardcore pornography, no violence, no one under 18?
Well, I am opposed to pornography in any shape or form. I think it promotes brutality among men, and I really do not think it does anyone any good.
Okay. This is the second caller, Heidi, to say
mm-hmm.
this about women have control over their bodies and they should exercise that control in
yeah.
terms of birth control. What's your response to that? Because you feel that abortion is fine as long as that's the woman's choice.
I don't believe it's fine per se. No, I don't.
Well, you state that is.
I don't consider it a form of birth control
okay.
at all. A woman has to know how to take care of her body, what she's doing with it, and that takes education.
Mm-hmm.
She has to educate herself and be responsible for herself. If somehow she becomes pregnant accidentally or, as the lady said, through violence,
mm-hmm.
then absolutely, I think abortion should be a choice for her.
Okay.
But I would not consider it a form of birth control in the least. And
okay.
You know.
Mark Emery, the brutes, our caller here, Margaret, is saying that she's against all pornography, that it promotes brutality.
Well, Wayne, I wouldn't know. Well, let me take an example. I remember when the movie Dog Day Afternoon was aired. It's a violent film.
Al Pacino,
yeah, yes. Oh, lots of shooting, what have you. You know, and I'd say
70s.
they must have gotten 20 million viewers on its first-time television broadcast. And 4 days later, a teenager reiterated that crime identically to how the movie was done. And within days, of course, you had religious leaders and concerned citizens saying, you know, we have to ban this sort of thing on television because it's obviously giving people ideas about it. And it's certainly true that certain weak minds may well do that. But we overlook the fact that 19,999,999 didn't do anything. They all watched them. They remained good parents. They remained loving couples and good fathers and mothers. And the children didn't go out and commit acts of vandalism the next day. Well, all we tend to see are what we want to see when it comes to media response. And I think, you know, a free society, if we want a free society, we have to take the risk that some people are going to do things we don't like. But a controlled society, one dictated by a central government, is a much worse price to pay than the dangers of some that freedom brings.
Caller, you have the last word on this.
I feel that the Canadian government should stop a lot of this stuff coming in from the States. I think it is a billion-dollar business backed by crime. And I think it does brutalize people, and I think they get hardened to it, and I think it is being promoted for money, and one of the big reasons that is being done.
Marjorie, thank you so much for your call this morning. Appreciate hearing from you. For this morning, the feminist movement, with my guests Heidi Strasser, who is a member of the London's Status of Women Action Group and also the Women's Issues Commission at Western. Mark Emery is with me this morning, the campaign director for the Freedom Party, a political activist, and what have you. generally man about town. Okay, let me get from each of you, if you could briefly, before we get to the calls, how do you see the feminist movement? If you took all of these ideas and these issues and these people and rolled them all up into one thing, what would you have? Mark Emery first.
Well, to me, Wayne, we have to define what a proper liberation movement would be. A liberation movement, no matter what form it takes, should always promote self-sufficiency, independence from government, and independence from dependency on other people, and it should promote personal contentment. What the feminist movement does is it promotes a gross dependence on government in every form of handouts, affirmative action legislation, laws against other people for special interests. It exploits the anger of troubled women and makes, instead of getting them to diffuse their anger and to find happiness in productive endeavors, that encourages them to develop that anger as a cause celebre, so that they're angry for the rest of their lives. And they're angry and looking for other victims. When they feel victimized, they are going out looking for other victims. And I think that's wrong. We've got to let them deal with their anger, let it flow out of their system so they can find all the good, happy things there are in life.
Okay, let me throw it over to Heidi Strasser.
Well, I can see Mark's point on the one hand, but I have to disagree with him that it's exploiting anger and so forth, because I think the feminist movement has a lot of positive sides that people who aren't involved in it don't see.
Perhaps Heidi could illuminate us then.
Things like feminist psychotherapy, things like that,
mm-hmm.
which teach women to be self-sufficient, exactly that, and there's a lot more positive side to being a woman,
sure.
and you don't have to be down on yourself, and you don't have to be down on other women, you don't have to be down on men.
Okay, I was going to add, you took the words right out of my mouth.
That's not what the... whenever I see a lecture by a feminist, she says we need to harness our anger. They're always talking about anger, and women in bondage, and women in oppressed, and they really want to whip you up into a frenzy of anger so that you go out. And they're manipulating this. That's not the way a person becomes content and self-sufficient. They become content and self-sufficient because they appreciate themselves as happy mm-hmm. human beings, and they respect others as potentially happy human beings with their own priorities. That's not what feminists are all about. Feminists are out looking for scapegoats to justify mm-hmm. their anger. And it's the leadership of the feminists that are exploiting women who quite capably could be productive people who are being manipulated by a political group with very left-wing neo-Marxist ideals. And I think there's no doubt about that if we read our media and seeing what they're asking.
Well, the way the media represents feminism and the way feminism really is are two very different things. You have to recognize
but
that.
But feminists are always trying to get press in the paper. They're picketing every movie.
Oh, you're a lot better, Mark.
Come on, Mark Emery.
Yes,
Of course, we'll have to voice our opinions.
I never claim to represent anyone else other than myself, Wayne, so I get to take the flack from my point of view. And if other people happen to agree with it, they're entitled to say so. But feminists make the claim they represent women, and I think that's a very dangerous assertion.
Okay, all right. Aside from that, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, you're out for publicity, too.
Oh, no, I'm out to promote an ideal, and that I need the media to promote that ideal, but I certainly do not do it at the expense of the rights of others, which feminism exists to exploit other women and other men to promote a political point of view. And I don't believe I've ever done that. I welcome a challenge if someone thinks I have.
Okay, that's fair enough. The lines are ready to go. We'll be back with more callers in just a moment.
This is Murray Hopper again. Find out more about Freedom Party. Phone 519-433-8612 or write to Freedom Party of Ontario, P.O. Box 2214, Station A, London, Ontario, N6A4E3. That's P.O. Box 2214, Station A, London, Ontario, N6A4E3, for a package of literature, including many issue papers on a wide variety of subjects, such as the welfare state, OHIP, poverty, rent controls, education, Ontario Hydro, and more.
Earlier in your show, you were asking the question of equal pay.
For work of equal value. Yeah. How do you feel about that, Larry?
Well, I think it's fine. But the comment made by Mark was that this was a Marxist theory.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just, I didn't know there was a Red Scare in London. I don't know, or in Canada. I don't know why women can't have equal pay for doing the same job. And just like to hear Mark's comment.
Could you explain? Because I found that unusual too, Mark. In what way specifically is that Marxist?
Let me give you an example. It's not just women here. Equal pay for work means a man who's worked 20 years at a company and has all that loyalty is to be paid the same as the fellow doing the same job who's only been there a month.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is that with this kind of concept in law, there's no need for an employer because he isn't entitled to determine what he's paying anybody. And we're talking about men and women here. There's no need for unions because they're not going to be in a position of negotiating since the government's going to determine those salaries anyway. And not only that, the reason certain women in certain sectors of our economy are paid less than men is because there are many more women competing for that job, and that women are willing to take less money because they want to get in the workforce. Young people are willing to take a lot less than an older man. A man with a family is going to want more, but a young person will take a lot less. And so they are willing to work for less. So that's where you have competition in labor markets, just like you have competition in the marketplace for consumer goods. I mean, electronic goods have come down in price because of competition. Labor goes up and down with competition, too. And it's up to the employer to decide what's in the best interest of his consumers. If he has to raise labor rates and he can't sell a product, everybody's out of work.
Okay, back to Heidi here, if we can.
I don't disagree at all that people who have been working in a certain position for 20 years should be paid more than someone who's been there for 2 years. I don't disagree with that at all.
But that's not what the law says. Equal pay for work of equal value is a broad thing.
Yes,
the government determines every single salary and wage marker.
Let's give her a chance to respond.
But I think that the real bone of contention here is that there are things going on such as a truck driver who has a grade 10 education and who just drives a truck for a living gets paid $3 an hour more than a secretary who's running an entire office. And women are ghettoized into these kinds of jobs. And no, they're not willing to take less pay.
But Heidi, who's going to determine all of this? I mean, you say truck driver, secretary, or, mm-hmm. or office manager.
Yeah.
Who's going to say that? Is this going to be the government saying this to us, or is it going to be the labor unions or management, or who?
I think there has to be a consensus with everyone.
Yeah.
I mean,
okay.
We are never going to agree on everything, but if we outline a basic structure, I think over the years we can eventually even it out.
Let me give our last word to Larry here.
Well, I agree with Mark that if a man has been in the field for more time, he should get more pay, but certainly a woman that is well-trained, just as well trained as a man, should get the same pay as the man.
Most employers would be glad to do that because they don't want that kind of discord in the factory. They don't want a woman working beside a man who's being paid less. She's going to be resentful. Her work, her productivity is going to suffer. But that's not what we're talking about here. Work.
Well, that's what I was talking about.
Okay, well,
the point I thought you were making was that women shouldn't get equal pay because this was a Marxist.
Women should get whatever they can find in the marketplace, just like men. There's no set standard for men to be paid either. A lot of men work at close to minimum wage in construction industries. Men work at low wages everywhere because that's all they can get at this point in time.
Oh, truly, but I just wanted to make sure you weren't saying that women shouldn't get equal pay for equal work.
Larry, we'll have to leave it there. Feminism, and does the feminist movement speak for you? Two exceptional guests this morning on this subject. First of all, Heidi Strasser is with me. She's a member of the London Status of Women Action Group. She's also a member of the Women's Issues Commission at Western University. Mark Emery is also here, certainly a voice that is familiar to many of you. Mark is involved with the fledgling Freedom Party. He's the campaign director, or was. I don't know, are you still?
Oh, yeah.
Even though it's over?
There'll be a campaign soon, I can tell.
And we have your calls on a number of issues. So let's go back to the hotline phones, Radio 98. Lily, you're on the air.
Hi, my name's Lily, and I'm a first-time caller.
Thank you very much for doing so, Lily.
I was going to talk about the equal pay for equal work.
Okay.
And I had 2 points to make about that.
Mm-hmm.
Down in South Africa, they had laws saying that if you had a job, you had to pick a white guy over the black guy. And in the construction area, the skilled black worker was saying, pick me instead, and I'll work for lower wages.
Lily, can you speak up just a little bit and right into your receiver?
Okay, there.
Thank you.
Okay, they're saying, I'll work for lower wages if you'll hire me instead of the white guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so the employers were saying, okay, we'll do that, despite the fact that this is against the law. And so they're hiring all these black construction workers instead of the white construction workers who were becoming unemployed. So the white unions were saying, hey, we want equal work, equal pay for equal work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's ironic that they're wanting the same thing as the feminists. And, you know, it was to the black people's advantage that they could offer a lower wage. another thing.
Okay, before you go on there, Lily, now, let me understand here if I can. You relate the two circumstances, the one in South Africa to the one that's being discussed here in Canada.
Yeah, because they're saying that women are getting lower wages because of prejudice against, there's some validity to that. And the blacks were certainly being unemployed because they were black. And then the whites were, you know what I mean?
Sure. Now, I'm not clear, though. Do you support equal pay for work of equal value or not?
No, I don't, because I think that having not equal pay for equal work is a big advantage to people who are being discriminated against, because they can get in where they wouldn't normally be able to get in if they had to be paid the same amount as someone who is, who's liked by the employer.
Okay, let me throw this to Heidi for a comment.
Okay, well, I'd like to say that the situations are quite different. First of all, South Africa has an apartheid government, and that's a totally different situation. But I would say even in areas such as teaching, where women are pretty well, comfortable in those kinds of positions, and it's something that women are, a field in which women, you often find women, they're almost inevitably still paid less money to be a teacher than the man. The guy next to him, they're almost always given lower grades. For example, you get paid more money if you teach grade 8 than you do grade 3. Women are teaching the primary grades, and men almost always are teaching the higher grades.
But is that really the case, though, with teachers? I mean, we have the OSSTF, the high school teachers. We have the public school teachers. I'm not aware of that a female teacher would get less pay than a male teacher in the same position.
Not necessarily because they're male and female per se, but simply because of the positions
that's the whole argument, isn't it? I mean, they're getting paid differentials because of their qualifications, their experience, and this sort of thing. I mean, we're trying to find prejudice where none exists here. This is, of course, a very common feminist tactic. I happen to agree with the caller, Wayne. I think disenfranchised people who are new to this country, minorities, ethnic people who want to get their foot in the door, will at first have to offer their services for less money. And you know what? It's going to bother the status quo. In South Africa, it bothered the white workers. They saw themselves losing jobs to blacks. Now, there's an irony. And I think we'll see that here. I think you see a lot of resentment from Canadians who were born here, from immigrants who are willing to do a job that they would do, but they want like $8 or $9 an hour, and an immigrant's willing to do it for $4 and $5 an hour. That's too bad. I think that's the consumer wants cheap goods, and he wants cheap services, he wants competition, and that's what the labor market is. It's a competitive field.
Let me get back to our caller. Lily, you have another point, I think.
Oh, well, I was just wondering, what's the ratio of male and female teachers in Ontario?
I think in the, I don't know specifically, do you, Mark?
It's pretty close. They're more in the primary grade.
Well, that's what I was going to say, yeah.
I'm just, let's say there's a woman who had her high school education, and she brought up her kids, and she's coming into the workforce, and she has no experience or job training or anything like that.
Yes.
And if she wants to get in, to move up the corporation or do well, she's going to get the job over someone who might be really young and say, oh, I'll stay there 10 years and have training already. She'll say, look, I'll get less pay than him, but I'll get the job, and I'll get the job experience, and I'll get that on my work record.
Lily,
for another job, it'll be easier for her to get
that job. Absolutely correct. Lily, let me thank you very much for taking time today to call, and I hope that you'll do it again on a future program.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you for your time. 1010 here on the hotline, 433-3121, Radio 98. Susan, you're on the air with Heidi Strasser and Mark Emery.
Hello.
Go right ahead, please.
Well, you asked if we felt that feminism was speaking for us.
Yes.
Myself, I don't feel, I have never felt that it speaks for me. However, I don't feel that Mark Emery speaks for me either. So,
but I don't claim to. That's the key difference.
Okay.
I don't claim to either.
Okay. I do feel that feminism claims to speak for women. If you are in a group of women who claim to have feminist reasoning or attitudes, whatever, they say they're speaking from a woman's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And being a woman, I think you're an individual, and not necessarily at all feeling the way other women feel, just the way as an individual man will not necessarily feel the way other men feel.
I think this woman agrees with me, Wayne, on this is the premise of my whole argument.
However.
What's the however?
However, I disagree with both of your speakers this morning on abortion. I disagree with Mark in terms of censorship. I do agree with him in terms of that there's far too much bureaucracy in government. It's become something that it shouldn't be. Government should be involved with justice for the people and not a lot of little rules and regulations.
But if you talk about censorship, though, Susan, are you not talking about more bureaucrats, more regulations, the enforcement of that kind of thing? And not to mention the great dilemma about how far do you go with freedom of speech and freedom of conduct?
Well, I don't know how this will be taken, but I think that a lot of the problems that come when people discuss censorship of pornography are because they are deliberately being blind. Of course, deliberately being blind, they don't want to admit that they're blind. But D.H. Lawrence, who had a lot of his work censored,
mm-hmm, yes,
wrote a book on censorship, and he felt that the difference was very clear between writing about sensitive human issues, whether they be sexual or otherwise, and things that are just appealing to gimme sort of attitude. There's a difference between selfishness and giving, and I think that's a large factor in pornography.
Okay, let me toss it over to my guest this morning, Mark.
Whenever someone talks about censorship, they're talking about offensiveness. In other words, something that offends someone, they feel that the state or somebody should come in and arbitrarily make such a thing illegal or cut it. And, Wayne, offensiveness is no criteria for the use of the law. A lot of things offend us in life, you know, advertising on television, billboards. Certainly explicit sexual conduct in magazines is offensive to many people, and I'll acknowledge that. And there are many other things that are offensive to people, but this is not a reason of any kind to take away the rights of people who want to indulge in what you consider offensive or a person considers offensive, and they do not. The law, you can't use the law like that. Think of the applications if we all were able to ban or lobby to get rid of things we all found personally offensive. It's just, that's no way to run a social system. That's no way to treat your fellow human beings by stripping them of their dignity to make their own priorities.
I think the word you used back there a while back in your sentences was indulge, and I think that's really a key that we can use to look at it, because a lot of what I'm talking about that needs to be censored, and I'm not involving a lot of stuff that a lot of other people would censor.
Okay, what should be censored?
What I'm saying is that the word that Mark used was indulge.
Yes.
A lot of it is. It's just gluttony of the spirit, really.
Okay, Susan, let me ask, I don't mean to interrupt you, but
okay,
what do you, you give me the impression that you believe in censorship in some cases, but not all.
Yeah.
Okay, what should be censored,
do you think? What do you want, names and, I don't know quite what you're asking.
Well, descriptions of the kind of things. Like, not explicit, but just the suggestion of sexual.
I have no problem, I mean, with sexual material. I'm not saying because it is involved with the sexuality of a person, it should be prohibited from being published,
mm-hmm,
or whatever. I'm saying that if you're speaking out for freedom, true freedom of people, then I think it's contradictory to say that filling ourselves with whatever we desire is good for us, is going to make us free.
I didn't say that. I quite agree with you. It doesn't make us free, but we have to bear the responsibilities of our own mistakes. And for you to say someone else should preempt someone from making a mistake, I believe is wrong. I believe part of living is making mistakes and learning to deal with the responsibility of making a mistake. And whether those are moral mistakes or legal mistakes or interrelationship mistakes, it's something that no one else can interfere with and tell you how to live your life. Otherwise, they're simply preventing you from experiencing necessary responsibility.
Okay, we've been a few minutes without Heidi in on this discussion. What are some of your comments?
I don't think that censorship, in my ideal anyway, is a matter of what offends me. But it's a matter of your right to swing your arm ends where my nose starts. And when I see material which is consistently degrading to men, women, children, dogs, it doesn't matter. I don't want that material there, you know. It's not just a matter of it being offensive to me, but what is that going to make that reader think of me as a woman or of my child as perhaps a sexual object?
But is that your business, though, how somebody else...
Yes, it becomes my business when they...
As long as they don't swing their arms at you or their fists at your nose.
If I could honestly believe that child pornography and violent pornography could be freely distributed...
But we're not talking about child pornography and violent pornography.
No, well, okay, any kind of pornography. It could be freely distributed and read openly, and there would be no, you know, physical consequences. There wouldn't be any more beatings or any more rapings than there are now. If I honestly believed that, then I would say pornography is all right, but it's not, and it has an effect on people, not only in their minds, but in their actions.
But aren't you giving an awful lot of power to a relatively few?
No, I'm not. It's an $8 billion business.
No, but I'm talking about the people who would censor all this stuff, or who would look at it and decide whether it's to be banned or not.
Well,
I mean, isn't that terrific power to have? And the Censor Board of Ontario has a lot of power for very few people.
Yes, I understand your point, absolutely. But a lot of the onus is put on the individual communities.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to you and me to say, I don't want this here.
That's entirely wrong. That's a shocking kind of way to run a social system.
But
I would...
Okay, you have the last word.
I would like to add that if we are going to be responsible persons as individuals, as... I agree with Mark that we should be, that we should take responsibility for our own actions. But then when we see, he was talking earlier about one person reacts in an incredibly horrible way to one movie. Fine. I'm not talking about a robbery or something. I'm talking about something that is going to show someone being massacred in some grotesque way. If even one weak person, if we know that there are people out there that are that susceptible and that weak, that they're going to make a violent impact on our society, on our community, then we should be responsible enough to say, look, there are some people who aren't responsible for themselves, who are not going to be able to become responsible if we put this in front of their face.
Oh, no,
no.
The
fact of life is those people can't handle it.
That's right, but you can't pass a law in advance to deal with it. You have to wait till they do something. Every human being...
Wait until they do it?
That's right. Every human being is entitled to the benefit of the doubt. Listen, you don't have a crime until a violent act is committed. How can you accept the premise that someone might do something and therefore we have to either imprison them or block them or prevent them from seeing something or censor their life? The whole point of life is living, and the slings and arrows of life deal people cruel blows, but we have to... Freedom is allowing ourselves to experience a little pain for the greater joy of a free society. We can't go around penalizing everybody because a few people might act untoward toward each other. I mean, would you, that's the Soviet Union or South Africa. I mean, yes, it is. They control you because...
That's not what I'm saying.
But of course it is. You said everybody was an individual. You said everybody was an individual. I heard you say that.
Excuse me, don't speak for me. You said you wouldn't.
No, but you did say over the phone here that you thought everybody was an individual and they had different priorities and different things that they regarded as important, and I agree with that. But all of a sudden now you're in a position to decide that other people are too weak-minded to deal with it, and that's...
No, you said that before. You said there would be one or two people who would see that and who would behave.
Okay, and do you agree?
But he's saying that freedom means taking that risk, that somebody weaker may commit an act of violence.
And then we deal with them in a court of justice where we can present evidence against a crime, not against assumptions of future guilt.
Okay, but certain things, this is what Heidi was mentioning very briefly, she touched on.
Yeah, but
she could believe
that nothing would happen if this material were allowed to be freely distributed. I mean, we know that this happens. We have past evidence that this happens.
Susan,
why do we just blindly go ahead and say, well, if it happens, and when somebody is grotesquely murdered or raped or attacked in some vicious way, then we will do something. We know it happens.
Well, then are you going to ban the 6 o'clock news? That's where all the violence of foreign wars is and of murders and of bombings and of assassinations. Is that what we're going to do first? Because that's what all our kids are watching, too, and we're all home eating.
Not all of our kids aren't.
Well, my point is that's the first thing that would have to go. That's where the real violence occurs in our society.
Susan, we're going to have to leave it there. I have lots waiting. Thank you so much for calling today. Helen, thank you for waiting.
Yes. I'd like to say, first of all, about pornography you were just speaking about.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that I agree with Heidi that it should be censored, because it is, I personally think it is doing a lot of harm in our society.
Well, let's hear some definitions on that, Wayne.
Okay, well, first of all, I disagree with Mark, I think that's his name,
mm-hmm.
that he said that we shouldn't censor because of a few. Well, first of all, there was a show a while back on TV about pornography, and one of the questions, they were interviewing a lot of college and university students, and that they said that they did enjoy watching pornography films and stuff like that, and they asked them questions concerning sex, right? And the majority said that women they felt that women enjoyed hard sex, and also there was a question about rape.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of them said that they had raped at least once in their life. Now, that's including...
Okay, but you draw a relationship then between the two.
Hold on, you're talking college students who had said they'd raped at least once in their life?
Yes, that includes, like, when you know a female and she invites you up to her place, and he automatically assumes that that gives him the right.
Well, this wasn't a University of Kingston Penitentiary, was it? Because I could never imagine such a shocking statistic.
No, it wasn't in what you said.
Well,
I think the majority of them said that they had used force to get sex. Was not what they said?
Well, yeah, okay, sorry. Maybe it wasn't.
That makes you wonder whether we should blame our university system for not teaching responsibility, or whether it's pornography. See, I guess if you're going to end up with students admitting such statistics or such things... Well, it's easy to blame pornography because they said they liked it, but in Canada it's basically illegal, so how do they see it? So they may well like it, but whether pornography in its currently limited forms is enough to influence people in a relationship to sexually assault someone they know and theoretically care for is, I can't believe that.
Okay, let me ask you something here. We talk about freedom of speech, and I know you haven't used that word today, or that phrase today, but do you consider, Mark Emery, that visual pornography, magazines and video,
mm-hmm.
is that speech?
Oh, sure. And it can be a political statement. I mean, I'm sure Heidi's even aware that explicit sex can be used in political statements. I'll admit quite frankly that most sexually stimulating material is exactly that. It's used for self-gratification. And I think people are entitled to that. I mean, I think that's possibly a more important priority than a lot of people is to voting or reading good books or what have you. See, I don't distinguish between what people's priorities are. That's theirs to set. I'm only speaking to protect everyone's right to practice whatever kind of peaceful, honest behavior they want to, and that includes their sexual activities and what they do with sexually oriented material. You know, I can't defend people that want to abuse their privilege and they go and commit a crime afterwards. Those people have to be dealt with, but that's what a free society is. We judge those who commit crimes.
But they're saying to you that the person who commits the crime can be influenced by the pornography he or she watches.
Oh, precisely. I'm sure they can, Wayne, but every piece of material ever written is designed to influence people, for better or worse. Religious tracts are written to turn people to God. I mean, political tracts are getting people to cause revolution, uprising, or to vote this way and the other. And everything has a good or bad quality to it, and it depends who it appeals to and what that material is saying.
Let me give Helen the last word on this.
Okay, so in other words, we should be willing to give way to those that want to indulge in their sexual fantasies or whatever.
As long as they don't obligate you to pay for it, or they don't render harm to you. Once they do either of those, it's an immoral act. Once they get you to subsidize their behavior, or once they assault you or commit a direct crime to you, of course, that's completely intolerable.
Okay, one more thing I'd like to ask you.
Not much time, so please be brief.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Did you say earlier in the show that you believe that women who get abused get what they deserve? Did I understand?
I didn't hear that.
No, I implied that way, and I'll explain that further. What I said is that people who exist in a relationship and know that there's violence there and continue to stay give tacit approval and acceptance to it. Now, I'm not saying it's right. People should never use violence for any reason. But we are the architects of our own fate. And if people are going to put up with a situation that's mutually self-destructive, then you've got to wonder why they're there. Because nothing's worse than humiliation of violence. And
okay,
if people stay, then obviously there's something.
But sometimes they don't have any choice. There's nowhere to go.
Wayne, you always have choice. There are choices exist even in the darkest moments.
Let me bring Heidi in.
Unfortunately, that's not true, and Mark has a lot of illusions about that. I'd say 9 times out of 10, when a woman stays with a man who's beating her, it's not because she wants to be there, not in the least. It's because she has to. There are children involved. She probably got married after she got out of grade 12, set up with her little white picket fence, and things turned bad, you know? And she doesn't have anywhere to go. Fortunately, there are a couple of halfway houses in the city where women can go with their children.
There she can go.
But very limited facilities there.
Okay, now, first of all, you're telling me that these women have no relatives or no friends or there are no other battered women's houses around? Are you telling me that their options are so completely, devastatingly limited? They have no skills, they have no friends? That's nonsense. All it is that people in a violent relationship why did they marry somebody like that? People go in with their eyes closed when they get married.
A woman is not going to marry a man she knows is going to beat her.
You're wrong. You're wrong. People sometimes get so lonely.
Sadistic tendencies, yes.
No, people get so lonely sometimes that they will run away from their parents because they don't like living at home. They'll move in or live with someone whom they don't know well enough, or they've chosen not to find out what they're about. They get into a relationship, they become pregnant, and then they find themselves inextricably involved, and then they find that the violence is getting worse.
If you could put yourself in the situation of the woman, though, I wonder if you would be so free and so easy with some of your ideas here.
But wait, all you're saying is that I don't seem to be showing any compassion, but me being compassionate for any woman in that situation isn't helping her. My advice to her is get the heck out of there.
Helen, thank you so much for your call this morning. Go ahead, Carol.
Good morning, Wayne.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a few points. I am, I suppose, a feminist.
Mm-hmm.
I think it comes down to a matter of choice and opportunity. I think a lot of the women that feel that feminists do not represent their point of view don't always understand.
Carol, can you speak up, please?
Sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah, that's fine. Thank you.
I think they don't always understand what women are working for who are in sometimes feminist organizations. Basically, it's to allow women to have the opportunity to have a choice so that if you wish to stay home and raise your family, that's fine. If you wish to go out to work, that you do have an equal chance. And in spite of what Mark says, that is not really available. It's becoming much better, but the traditional idea has been that men should be paid more because they have a family to support. And that doesn't help a woman who is a head of a single-parent family. And of the single-parent families, of which there's a great number in Ontario, 80% of them are headed by women. So, you know, you have women who are trying to look after one, two, or more children and who are earning, you know, $10,000, $12,000, $14,000 a year, and really find it very difficult to move up in an organization. I'm sure that Mark would disagree with me, but I think the whole attitude that he has really is not in touch with what reality is for most women, particularly in smaller communities. You're very limited in your choices of work, of opportunities to advance. You basically, for most women, if they want to be successful financially, the best opportunity is to go out on their own in their own business. But again,
well, I'd certainly agree with that. But what's this got to do with feminism? I can see feminist objectives only hindering women in the workforce. Can you describe to me how feminism has possibly helped that, for example, the woman you described, a single parent with couple of children trying to get away up. Can you tell me what feminism has done to help her? I can't see anything.
Well, for one thing, there are more job opportunities now, and if we had affirmative action like the U.S. has had, even if only for a limited time, 10 years or whatever, it would give them an opportunity to move up. Because right now, basically most jobs are not through hiring on the basis of skills only. It's somebody knows somebody. You know, 80% of the jobs are not advertised.
Carol, in the U.S., though, they do have problems with reverse discrimination.
Yeah, I agree they do. But as Stephen Lewis said a long time ago, men have had a couple thousand years of affirmative action. Would it really hurt for us to have 10 years for women?
Absolutely, because two rights or two wrongs don't make a right, and that's exactly what you're doing. You're saying we've had a prejudicial system in the past. And incidentally, prejudice is always most harmful when it's exercised by government, because they have no power. Like, you have no recourse when government exercises prejudice. I mean, they're using the force of law.
Mark, just a minute. You know, you're saying it's harmful when it's exercised by government. Government exercises it right now, and I'll give you one example, okay? Under the Family Law Reform Act of 1978, in it, they did allow that spouses have a claim on the other spouse's assets. So, for example, if you separate, a woman cannot be left penniless.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly justifiable.
Just a sec. But what they missed and has not been changed since is, for example, if a husband owns a farm and it's in his name, but the wife and, or the, you know, the spouse, the woman, okay, and he's been married for 40 years, he, on in his will, can leave that, all his property, to somebody else, and she can be left penniless and will have to go and apply to the courts to get relief under that. You know, or he can leave her an income of $5,000 a year, even though she may have worked as hard in building that
than
what he had. So what's happening is the government has discriminatory laws, and to not try and change those is really irresponsible.
I know, but you're not asking for what the feminists are conveniently asking for in almost every other case, which is a special privilege at the expense of others. You're simply asking for justice, and this doesn't mean, it doesn't make any difference if she's a man or a woman. There are other areas I'm sure I'd agree with you. Men who skip town or leave the province to avoid alimony and child support payments should be tracked down anywhere on the continent and brought back and be made to pay to meet their obligations. But those, we're talking about issues of justice there. We're not talking about issues where another group of society are penalized because certain women with a certain ideology think that we need government programs to give special privileges.
Carol, you have the last word here.
Well, I think Mark is totally wrong. He is not looking at what he can do to help people. He's totally negative. It's like the pornography issue. He isn't looking at the harm that it's doing to the children and the women. He's not looking at them as their rights that are being infringed upon. You know, I can't even send my 5-year-old to school in the morning without by herself because I don't feel that it's safe.
Yeah, but that's your paranoia coming out. That's not
that's not paranoia.
It is paranoia, and you're going to convey that paranoia to your child. And what kind of attitude is she going to have to other people as she grows up? And she has to carry along all your overprotectiveness, you're probably blocking off all the TV she watches too, and you're probably, you know, if you try and protect her from all the slings and air.
My child's a very well-adjusted little girl. But most of the parents that I know don't feel comfortable in that.
But if you're worried about what she's like walking to school, I don't deny that your child's well-adjusted. That's not the person I see the problem. I'm saying that why are you worried? If you're worried about things like that, you'll never want to let her go. You'll never give her any independence because you'll be afraid of the consequences.
Mark, the statistics show that women and children are not safe anymore. Is allowing men, like you're saying, you can't punish, you can't stop anyone, you can't take away any rights from somebody who wants to watch pornography, no matter how brutal or violent or degrading.
But let me ask you this, Carol, and we're going to have to move on, but if you're talking about kiddie porn or you're talking about violence and pornography, most people are going to agree with you. But what about the erotica or the hardcore pornography that is sexually explicit but does not have youngsters under the age of 18 and has no simulation of violence? Isn't that the business of the person who goes into the video store to rent that film? Doesn't that mean that that's his or her problem or his or her joy?
I have no problem with erotica.
Okay.
Not at all. Okay, I think that's everyone's right. If that's what interests them, that's just fine. But what I have an objection to is that's not what's happening. You know, you can get very, very hardcore
child pornography.
Where can you get this? This is a complete lie. I would like to say that this is a complete falsehood.
It is a complete...
Well, tell us where. It's illegal to sell it, so I'm sure you have no qualms.
All through the states, when you come through customs, there's no problem bringing it through.
Oh, I see. So you're not saying it's sold anywhere in Canada, are you?
It is available here.
Well, where? Where is it available? Have you seen it? Have you heard? Do you know of someone who's bought it?
Yes, I do.
Well, why haven't you told the police about this?
Because what am I supposed to do?
It's illegal, and it should be illegal, and it should be prosecuted. But, you see, the feminists are using this as a cover to get at every other kind of thing they don't like, including peaceful pornography or ads and billboards. This is a scapegoat, and I want to address this right now. I want you to tell the police right after this call where you've seen this for sale, this child pornography, because it's illegal and it should be prosecuted. But I don't... See, nobody ever does that because it's not around, or the police would be there tomorrow. And it's being used.
Mark, you're being very, very confrontationist. And you talk
Yes, because you're advocating taking people's rights away for a reason that doesn't even exist. So I want you to produce the evidence. I want, if we're in the court of public opinion here, I want the evidence now. Where is this being sold? In this province, in this city, or your city?
Are you telling me that you don't read the papers enough to see the prosecutions on people selling violent pornography and child pornography?
No, I don't. I want to know where those convictions are. I've got clippings an inch thick in my billfold here. That's not what police are prosecuting. They're prosecuting Penthouse. They're prosecuting Playboy. That's the things that police are rounding up. They don't find any child.
The Penthouse things are violent, extremely violent.
Oh, now we get to the real interpretation of violence.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it here. Carol, let me thank you very much for your call this morning. It's been a very lively discussion. Heather, you're on the air with Heather, boy, oh boy. Heidi Strasser, Mark Emery, I'm okay, go ahead.
Hello, I would like to make a comment on about three callers ago, she was mentioning about the South African blacks.
Yeah.
She used that as an analogy with women today. First of all, I think that is a very poor analogy. I knew a South African. He was here on an exchange with the Rotary, and it's not like that at all. The blacks were there first. First of all, the proportion of the blacks to the whites is phenomenal. There are probably 10 blacks to every white person there.
5 to 1.
The blacks have the rights, actually. The blacks should be the ones that get the jobs. Now, I'm not saying preferential hiring because I disagree with preferential hiring, or as the feminists might call it, reverse discrimination. But I think that was a very poor analogy because white women today, okay, they have been compared to blacks in that they are discriminated against, but I don't think that they are parallel to the blacks in South Africa. The blacks in South Africa have far more rights than the whites ever should. The whites, they can't ride on the same bus as the whites. They can't use the same washrooms as the whites. The blacks...
Okay, bad analogy. You've made the point very well. How do you feel, though, about equal work for equal pay for work of equal value?
Oh, in this country. Okay, I feel that, I heard Mark comment, first of all, I was for equal pay for equal work. I did not realize, I took a feminism course at the University of Western Ontario, and I didn't realize that equal pay of equal work for equal value or whatever required that men who have been in a job or women who have been in a job for 40 years get paid the same as people who are just starting. Now, I disagree with that completely. I think maybe what I agree with is probably fairness. There's no other word for it.
But who doesn't? I mean, I've never met a person.
Well, okay, what's happening is that is not happening. I don't have any, you know, grounds. I don't have any examples for you. But the way it sounds is that some women are going into a job and doing the same work as their male counterparts, and they're not getting paid the same.
Let me give you a proposal here. Let's say she goes and gets a job, and the man's being paid $10 an hour, and she's being paid $8 an hour. Now, she accepted that job at $8 an hour, correct?
Yes.
Well, what's the problem then?
Okay, what the feminist would say, probably, I'm not putting words into her mouth.
Well, let's get Heidi back into this here, too, okay?
Yeah, what's wrong with that? Like, she accepts it, Heidi. She looks for a job, and an employer says, I'll give you $8 an hour. You see, a man might have wanted $10. I'm not advocating this. I'm just looking at the possibilities. A man may have come and said, I'll work for $10. A woman says, I'll work for $8. He hires the woman at $8. And she gets a job. But if he knows he's going to have to pay that woman $10 an hour, like the man, maybe he'll hire a man. And maybe women will be worse off. In fact, I know they'd be worse off.
That's where the discrimination comes in.
Well, sure, it's discrimination. And employers can be easily as susceptible to discrimination as everyone else in our society.
Okay, let me hear from
her. But are women going to be better off when we make it law that they have to be paid exactly the same as any other man in any other company? I mean, women as consumers are going to be paying for this too. Women as people in the workforce trying to get a job are going to be paying through the nose that by not getting work.
Okay, Heidi.
Well, I think that it's a pretty silly proposal to be saying that, people should be getting paid the same amount for when they've been working for 2 years as they would when they were 20. That's ridiculous.
Yeah,
that's
you're
ridiculous.
Not saying that.
No, not at all. And I don't know. I'm familiar with the course. I haven't taken it personally, the one you're talking about at Western. But I don't know where this proposal came up. I mean, that would be a very broad, blanketing equal pay for work, equal value proposal. I don't think that's really what most feminists are looking for, per se, but rather just simple economic equality. When you got basically the same experience and doing basically the same job, you should be making as much as a man.
You know, if I came to this radio station as a talk show host, and a woman came to this radio station as a talk show host in the evening, why shouldn't we each get the same money?
I'll tell you why.
If we both have the same qualifications.
Yeah, but sure, same qualifications, but what if you're getting better ratings than she is? Or what?
But that's different, though. I'm talking about starting out.
Yeah, but you're saying equal pay for work of equal value.
Uh-huh.
Who's to determine what the value is? What if you get twice the ratings? Is she supposed to get half the value then?
But that is after.
But who's to say? Like, the government's going to be drawing these determinations at every level of our society. The government's going to just have this field day determining who's worth what. And what about a construction industry working for a big, huge company? What about a guy who's paid $12 an hour and a guy who does the same work for a small company being paid $5 an hour? The government's going to say, well, you're both doing the same work of same value, and he's not even going to look at whether they can afford more, so the little guy's going to have to pay twice as much, and the big company may have to lower theirs.
No, I think you're wrong on that, because there's a company difference. If, for example, if there was a secretary in IBM getting paid $7 an hour and a secretary in some other company, GM or what have you, getting paid $8 an hour, I don't think the government should intervene, so long as there are male and female secretaries within that one company being paid equal value for the work they're doing.
But who's to say? I mean, the one person we've treated as the real scapegoat here is the employer. The employer has no rights under this system. The employer has to put up or shut up or be closed down or fined. I think it's shocking. Once again, the person who's the producer, the businessman, is being used as the scapegoat for the frustrations of people who think they deserve more but don't have the courage to go somewhere else and look for it.
Let me give the caller the last word here. Heather, you have it.
Well, first of all, I didn't intend to get into the equal pay for equal value. I was actually speaking of preferential hiring, which involves hiring. If there's a woman and a man applying for the same job, the woman should get it. Now, I disagree with that completely. Productivity goes down. The woman it wouldn't be very good if the woman found out that the only reason why she was hired is because she's a woman. I mean, that's discrimination in itself. I think preferential hiring has a lot to do with this feminist issue.
Heather, we're going to have to leave it there.
Okay.
Thank you so much for your call. I'm glad you took part today.
This is Murray Hopper again. If you are enjoying this tape, please phone 519-433-8612 for information about ordering tapes on the following subjects: Freedom Party's successful opposition to the tax-funded Pan Am Games, the question of censorship, and philosophy, the heart of all political issues. If you prefer, write to Freedom Party of Ontario, P.O. Box 2214, Station A, London, Ontario, N6A4E3. That's P.O. Box 2214, Station A, London, Ontario, N6A4E3.
First of all, I'd like to say bravo to Mark. I've found him very, very supportive of everyone, not just women. And I like to tell Heidi to get off the pot and either make up her mind on what she wants as a feminist.
Where do you think she's not being clear? What area?
On the individual rights of a woman, either in pornography or in abortion. First of all, she says abortion is fine if that is through rape or incest, or if that's the individual's choice. And then she turns around and says, hey, I don't want this woman doing any type of pornography because it may influence my children. It may influence my neighbor. It may influence my job opportunities because they'll degrade me as a woman.
Okay, let's have a response then.
First of all, I want to point out that the woman who is doing the pornography is not my bone of contention at all. The woman who's doing that pornographic job, whether it be a Playboy layout or whether she's being beaten for a living, she's not doing it out of choice for the most part. If you need the money, you need the money. And most people, women who are in pornography, and men for that matter, are doing it because maybe they don't have any other skills. A lot of women who are in pornography, and this is probably going to shock you, are kidnapped in one way or another.
Oh,
and I think that okay, Margot.
That's insane.
Okay.
That's insane.
I agree.
They're not there out of choice.
Oh, that's.
And
nonsense.
I'm saying, if a woman really wants to be a porn star, all the power to her. But let
but
her
you
make
just
that
wanna,
decision.
No, you want to take away her income. You want to deny her.
No,
the,
I don't.
People the access
no.
to her product.
She could be working in erotica just as easily if there were as big a demand for it. And I think the demand is increasing. If she wants to use her body, if she has a beautiful body and she wants to make a good living off of that, then, you know, let her work in something that isn't harmful to other women.
Corrine, we only have about 8 minutes on the show, so make your comment, please.
Yeah, isn't that woman who is taking the life of an unborn child, influencing someone else, hurting someone else? And meanwhile, you're supporting her to do this because it's her body. She can do whatever she wants.
Absolutely, but abortion is a matter of it always being a lesser of two evils. Can the woman support that child? Is that child going to be in a foster home for the rest of his life?
Who can support that child for her? There's people out there who are waiting 2-3 years to have an adopted child and can't because all these women who are using this as, well, this is my body, this is my life, I can run my own life, I can get rid of this child.
Probably that woman is in an economic situation where she doesn't...
But you just criticized that as being an excuse for being in the porn.
No, I didn't say it was an excuse. I said it was a reason.
It's too bad and it's a shame and that's why she's doing it. But now using the same reason for abortion, it becomes a noble cause.
Corrine, you have
no,
the last...
No, I'm not.
You have the last word.
Okay, and another thing, as in wage, if you want a job, you go out and get it. And if you agree with your employer that I am going to get paid $8 an hour, that is fine. That's no one else's business. It doesn't matter if the guy next to me who just came in and said, well, I'll agree to work here for 11. Those are their two decisions.
Corrine, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Glad to hear from you. Radio 98, Carol, you're next.
Oh, I made it.
Yes, you did. Go ahead, please.
Okay, first of all, I'd like to make a comment that I'm calling from work.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been on hold for 20 minutes.
Thank you.
I've got a busy program. But I think that a lot of the opinions that you hear from women at home are anti-feminist because women who stay at home are traditionally anti-feminist, and it's the women who are out at work who are with the feminists, and most of us can't call because we're at a desk and there's people around us, and we don't have the privacy to make a call of this type.
How are you getting away with it now? Okay, got
another
your point.
Long story. We haven't got time for
okay.
that. Okay, I'm back about 4 or 5 comments here to Mark about a woman shouldn't stay in a battered relationship. She should just get up and walk out.
Yes,
walk
absolutely.
Walk out to where? To that low-paying job she has to take.
Absolutely.
She can't get equal pay for equal work.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. Any job she can get at all, because she has a commitment to her children, and if she wants to exist in an environment with violence, she's made a commitment to herself, and if she wants to accept that abuse, fine. But her children should never be exposed to that kind of violence.
But is life really that simple, Mark?
Life is always black and white. It's whether people want to make the decision to do something positive. It's not easy, Wayne, but it has to be done.
It would be great to be a young man and have all the answers.
Are you assuming that I've never gone through any kind of slings and arrows? I've never suffered like you? You know, the reason I can say this is because I've had a number of personal disasters. I've been wiped out in business. I've lost everything before. I've learned from those things, and I've learned that there's a lot of good things to come out of some very painful tragedies. And that's what life is all about, learning to make something good out of something that's been bad. And I'm saying a woman, when she's in a bad situation, there's no good involved in staying any longer. Get
your
out and take the kids.
Your turn, Carol.
Well, I'm just sort of trying to follow a chain here. You know, it's all well and good to say do this and do that. So a woman goes out and she goes for a job. And I can just give you an example of the kind of things that are actually happening in the workforce. Okay, this happened to me a number of years ago. I'd lived in this area. I went to Montreal for 5 years. I came back, and I started to fly around here for jobs. And nothing much happened for a while except $7,000 a year jobs. And I said, don't be ridiculous.
What's wrong with that?
That's half what I was making in Montreal.
Oh, too bad.
Oh,
cry me a river. Why should you, somebody have to meet your previous expectations?
Why don't you let me finish? Let me get to my point.
Okay? And what is that, Carol?
All right. The point is I was called to go out for a job interview. And the girl who called me from the agency said, be very, very careful because they have specified, even though this is illegal, don't send us any women. This is not the type of a job a woman can do. She said, but you're my best qualified person. To make a long story short, she sent me out. I was interviewed. The next day, I got a call from another agency. They said, we've got your job interview, blah, blah, blah. And I said, where? They told me. And I said, but I was there yesterday. And this was a guy now on the line, and he said, I don't understand this. They told me that they would not accept any women, but he said I couldn't find any decent men. I finally finally called them back, and they said, yes, they'd see you. So, in other words, they told two agencies no women, but they'd sent me, and then found out that, maybe women weren't such idiots after all.
Carol,
ultimately, I got the job at a man's pay.
Good for you. Carol, thank you so much. Marty, not much time. Go ahead, please.
I would just like to say that it's my contention that censorship in any form is wrong. It's wrong to censor art, literature, movies, books. I think that if people look at it hard enough, that time over the years has borne that out to be a fact. Censorship is usually just the paranoia and the whims of whatever action group, in our case the women's action group, happens to try to level at the community at the time. And we can look back over the years and see that things like Lady Chatterley's Lover and The Story of O, which were banned and outraged the communities that they were released in, after years of going back and looking at them, we can see that now they're accepted literature. They're no longer considered a threat to society. And I just think that people tend to let their own personal hang-ups and idiosyncrasies try to influence the bulk of the art and other forms of material that are being censored. They try to show that as being a real scare and threat to the society in general.
Marty, thank you so much for your call. Radio 98, Brenda, not much time. Go ahead.
Okay, Wayne, I've learned a lot over this election campaign, and I think the one main thing that struck me is the fact that the white Anglo-Saxon male is so totally threatened by people who do not choose to remain subservient. Now, even Marx's New Freedom Party denotes feminine protection. I don't know. I was sitting in an all-candidates meeting the other night thinking that some of the comments that were being made by Marx and Marx's representatives were so far back in the dark ages that I really begin to wonder how far we have come.
Thank you very much, Brenda. We're out of time.
Thank you.
Okay. Heidi Strasser, I appreciate your coming up this morning. It's been a very, very excellent program, and I've enjoyed it. Thank you very much. Mark, it's always a pleasure. You're very stimulating, and I appreciate your being here, too.
Thanks for inviting me.
Coming up on Monday morning, lawn, garden, and indoor houseplant care specialist...